This is episode number 53 with Zeka Len, GP at Responsibly Ventures. Welcome to the Masters of Cashflow podcast. My name is Andrew Senduk, a former banker turned tech entrepreneur. And in each episode, I interview the movers and shakers of the venture capital and investment space in Southeast Asia, with the only goal to help you discover how to raise more capital, build better companies, and to give you a better understanding of the people behind the biggest funds in the region. Thank you so much for spending time with me today. Now let's get started. All right, beautiful people, welcome to a new episode. This is going to be a first. There's always a first, but Zeka and I have been connected by David. So David, if you're listening, big shout out to you. But Zeka and I have actually met each other, I think literally like 14 minutes ago. So this is going to be a big one, but we just decided that we're going to record this this podcast. It's going to be amazing. I mean, Zeka is GP at Responsibly Ventures. He's backing US startups with remarkable teams in both sustainability and social good. So I think, you know, if you've listened to the podcast, I'm always a big fan if money goes further than ROI, and there's ROI actually for the earth, for people, you know, and if money just goes much further than just money, right? I think that is what we're all supposed to do. But Zeka's had an enormous career, actually, if you look at it from an investor perspective. But, you know, if you look at it, if we go back all the way to, let's say, what is it, 2007, 2009, you've always had this environmental angle, I think, within your career. You started off as an environmental economist at Ecology and Environment. And after that, you co-founded West to West. You've been a data science professional, and you've been an angel investor for also quite some time. So I'm really pumped for today to do this interview, Zeka. So welcome to the show, man. I'm happy that you're here. I feel that the energy is really good, even though it's 9 plus PM there. But welcome, welcome, welcome. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing so good, Andrew. I'm happy to be here. And that intro is remarkable. Just right on the fly. It was tremendous. Thank you so much.
Awesome, man. Hey, so you know, we talked a bit about it. We talked a bit about demystifying, or, you know, the myths around fundraising. And I think when it comes down to sustainability, I think there's still a lot to learn, a lot to educate in the world, right? Maybe you could tell us more a bit about Responsibly and how that started. It's been almost a year, I think, that you guys have been running it, or that you have been running it. What's Responsibly all about?
Okay, well, I'm the general partner of Responsibly Ventures. It's a pre-seed VC impact fund focused on both sustainability and social good.
Yeah.
And I used my 20 plus years of a background in sustainable investing, as you said, as a former environmental economist and data scientist, to kind of synthesize my life experience into connecting with founders across the US that are trying to make an impact in the world for the purpose of sustainability and social good, or what I like to call social tech and sustainable tech.
Social tech and sustainable tech. I love that, man. Like, oftentimes when I have these discussions about, you know, having or investing in startups, it is, you know, more often than not, it is, of course, about, you know, how much, what is going to be the multiplier of my, you know, $500,000 check, for example.
Of course.
And I think with when sustainability comes into place, or when social good comes into place, there's other elements which can justify an investment, right? So could you bring us a bit, tell us a bit more about how you look at the quote unquote ROI pressure from LPs and how you deal with that versus the, you know, the social impact?
Absolutely. Back to dispelling myths, there is this common myth that is prevalent around things like philanthropic venture and patient capital and profit and purpose type style of investing that may be more patient. And there's a market for that. There's a massive market in social enterprise and social impact. And there's a long history of blended finance and things like social entrepreneurship, where there's perhaps also a nonprofit component to investments that are made that are a little bit concessionary on a returns basis. And that doesn't necessarily always have to be the case. You could just take one example a lot of people like to use as one example of a social impact company that's scaled. That's Tesla. Another would be something like Grove Collaborative. They're crossed their $1 billion mark, I believe. They were a unicorn and perhaps now a unicorn. And they're in the non-hazardous direct-to-consumer space, that trying to provide low packaging waste for non-hazardous cleaning products and in a direct-to-consumer model, and have done tremendously well that way. So long story short is that sustainability and social good, the way I look at things, don't necessarily have to be sacrificial from the standpoint of returns relative to whatever benchmark we're looking at,
yeah,
via geography, stage, or otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah, that's amazing, man. And then when we go back, let's say, to the beginnings, right? I always love to talk about the beginnings, you know, both from a startup perspective, but I think for a VC perspective, it's going to be the same thing, right? The zero to one season, let's say, what kind of like made you start this fund, and how did the beginnings look like, you know, like rallying your LPs and kind of like get them behind the total.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, it's been a wild journey. We launched, I think it was 7 months ago. We're actually raising under this 506C designation in the US, which allows us to publicly solicit under the SEC's rules and guidelines, which is pretty awesome. You know, with 8,000 Twitter followers, I can put out a message and say, hey, we're looking for LPs. We're raising capital.
Yeah.
I do a little bit of like raising in public. I don't like to do too much of it because it can annoy people.
Yeah.
But I sometimes do that. And with that, it's been an amazing process just to put things into the open.
Yeah.
In terms of getting geared toward a fund, I actually have known for about 20 years, I wanted to be a professional sustainability investor. Yeah. I didn't know it was actually going to be in venture capital. Candidly, I thought I was going to actually raise and start a ESG style hedge fund, a sort of an activist fund or something like that. And I gave myself maybe 15 years to, you know, get everything I needed to know quantitatively, becoming a programmer and all these things turning toward data science. The ultimate goal was to raise a hedge fund, a impact hedge fund.
Yeah.
However, one day I was working at a family office and someone gave me a book on angel investing by Jason Calacanis.
And, oh, wow.
And
legend. Yeah.
Yeah. They said, read this book and you probably want to put some, you know, put some bets in toward startup investing, and got to that state. So I was really excited. I read that book and a light bulb went off and I thought, yeah, I really want to get to know more about this. So I ended up stopping that work and went out to become a full-time angel investor, but also a VC scout.
Wow.
Just getting exposure to the full US market,
getting
to know founders, learning about their stories, probably talked to about 1,000 of them in the first year to start investing.
Yeah.
Saw, I don't know how many thousands of deals and invested in a very, very select few. And it's done tremendously well. It hit 80% IRR. And this is, I'll talk about this in the public. Yeah. As an angel investor, hit 80% IRRs on sustainable and social good style investments, impact geared. That's on 40 investments since 2019. Among that sort of vintage year, it's done the top 1% among USVC.
Wow. That's amazing.
Pretty,
man.
Awesome.
I'll say as well
that 84% of the startups have one or more underrepresented founders, which is also additive to the value and the strategic advantage, in my opinion.
Yeah. That's amazing, man. And so let's go into a bit of details of the fund, right? Like where are you at now? Like what's current AUM and what's kind of like the ticket size that you focus on?
Well, we're just getting started. We had our first close. I don't want to be overly pitching and selling, but we had our first close in December.
Okay.
And that was a wild ride. You know, I had never raised capital before as a fund manager or as a founder. I've never started to scale the company. So I didn't really know what it was all about. And I learned a ton in that process.
Yeah.
And now we're going toward our second close and really just keeping the relationships going and going forward in a way to just stay consistent and wrap up a close. It's been pretty awesome. We're going to go for a $10 million raise over the next 6 months or a year and
amazing.
Just trying to keep momentum.
Yeah. That's amazing, man. You mentioned something which is quite interesting. So you say like now in the US, it is actually possible to raise money just from the public markets, like through, for example, Twitter?
I have to be clear. We still have to raise from US or not. We have to raise from accredited investors that are accredited under the US standard. We also have to have a verified letter that says, look, you know, your accountant or lawyer or your financial representative has to sign a letter on your behalf saying, you know, you're accredited. That's one of the distinctions.
Yeah.
But then also our LPs have to go through a quick, you know your customer.
Yeah.
And another couple very simple steps I think that's just kind of standard for everyone on our platform. We're with AngelList. We're raising our fund there. It's very simple.
Yeah.
You can also run syndicates on the side, which is
exactly.
We're
I love
gonna,
it, man.
We're actually going to be running a syndicate here for one of our first companies that have gone to seed, and it looks like we may have exclusive access. So that's pretty awesome.
Oh, wow.
A quick win.
That's awesome. And I mean, you mentioned something very interesting, right? Like the whole AngelList platform, or Republic for that matter, or any type of other, you know, platform, which makes investing so much easier. So maybe you could bring us, I mean, I don't know how much you could, you know.
I'll try to share as much as I can.
Yeah. So if we go back to, okay, so there's this idea. Okay, let's start a fund. You know, we want to invest into, you know, startups that are impacting the world in a good way, right? Not just only give like 100x return. So you have in mind.
By the way, we're looking for 1,000x returns.
Exactly. I like that.
Just to keep it focused. I mean, we really are a return-seeking fund. So I look at us as a VC impact fund.
I love it.
Which is to say, finance first impact. So my job is just to, I don't want to reverse this. I want to go back to your question, but my job is to find the best startups that also have an impact story to them and impact focus.
I love that, man. But then, you know, from formulating that investment thesis to doing all the admin stuff, right? Because funny enough, I did a fund manager bootcamp like a few weeks back.
Oh, really? How was that?
It was amazing, man. So they really gamified the whole process of setting up the fund, finding the LPs, creating deal flow, et cetera, et cetera. One of the things actually that was a big lesson was more on don't forget how much admin and, you know, like,
right.
Yeah, admin stuff you need to do to set up the fund, right? But it's indeed. So for your fund now, do you run everything through a platform like AngelList?
Yeah, correct. It's all through AngelList. And one of the nice things about AngelList is it's pretty much a one-stop shop for everything, all the fees and licenses and all the background checks and all the onboarding.
Yeah.
We have a representative, which helps tremendously. Yeah. And even, you know, some of the fund tax things, it's all pretty much set that way. And the price is very fair. It's very scalable.
Yeah.
Some of the other platforms I entertained when I was first getting started, and frankly, they were a little less transparent. They were difficult to kind of figure out what it would actually cost in the end.
Yeah.
For a larger fund, that could make sense. But for a micro fund like ours, you really want it. We're very price sensitive.
Yeah, of course.
But we also want high quality. So for me, it was a great meet in the middle there.
Yeah. So if we find a parallel, you know, within the startup space or like e-com space, we could see that AngelList is now really working like a Shopify for e-commerce entrepreneurs, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say that's very fair.
That is amazing. That is amazing. So
Naval Ravikant, he's pretty much a genius. I think
amazing. Amazing, man. Amazing. So there was a study from the Kauffman Foundation. And one of the conclusions of that study was that out of every 10 angel investments, just one or two on average provided 90% of portfolio returns, right?
That's right.
Which
power law.
Power law, right? Kicking back like roughly like 10, 30x each. So the big question, I think, with not only angel investing, I think in general, when you're managing or structuring your portfolio and your investments, is how to choose the right two.
Yeah.
How to choose the right one
I
or
love
two,
this
right?
Combo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what's kind of like your approach in choosing those one or two that are gonna give you that home run?
Well, you're right in that the structure is like this, but actually I would suggest that one doesn't try to just pick one or two out of the portfolio. You really have to try to optimize the portfolio in such a way that all of them have maximum chance. Mm. Having said that, we are a little bit unique in a couple ways. One, we have a 14-year fund window, which is 2 years to 4 years longer than most. And so we're also a pre-seed fund. So we focus exclusively very early on.
Yeah.
We can invest anywhere from a $2 million cap. A cap on the save for the convertible note up to about a 10 million cap. That's our sweet spot. And in that range, there are maybe 2 to 3 small rounds for those. Yep. You know, I don't know how it sounds like your listeners are quite sophisticated. I just don't want to go overboard on some of the So long story short, I guess, we focus in that range. What was the question though? One more time. I want to make sure I get it right.
What is the question again? Right. I think
it's fine.
I think we were just talking more about like choosing the right ones. Right. When we talk about like building portfolio, structuring portfolio, like how do you?
Yeah. Right. So back to the way our fund, sorry. Thank you for refreshing me. So back to our fund, the way I look at things, because we're very early, we aren't necessarily looking for unicorns alone. However, an IPO strategy does make a lot of sense because once a company gets beyond, say, a Series A or a Series B, they're usually going to go toward not a SPAC, which is, you know, like the style of exit in the US, but they may go for a direct listing, which may be somewhat lower than, say, $1 billion valuation once it goes into the public, or they may go toward an IPO. So I think for us, the way I look at it is we have an optimal strategy based on some research I've done, where there are growth style companies which may be more likely to have an M&A, even though they don't exit for $1 billion. We think we can eke out more IRR on a fund basis. There aren't a lot of funds that do something or outward about this, in my view. I mean, I know Bessemer has has discussed some of these things, and some people are favorable to a little bit more like the money ball style of investing. But we have a little bit of a different approach in that it's gearing toward what I look at growth versus late stage, if you will.
Yeah, I love that. I think eventually, like when your aim is to do, let's say, 1,000x, right? The only maturity stage that you can invest in is, of course, early stage. I mean, if you go, I think even like 100x plus return, you can never achieve that in, like, you know, from Series B up. I would say theoretically, it's kind of like not possible to aim for those type of returns if you go into later stage, right?
Yeah, it is not easy, especially from pre-seed. I mean, we're really betting on the team.
Yeah.
We're betting on what we think the defensibility will be.
Yeah.
Most VCs, ourselves included, are not really going after IP or intellectual property center deals as much. We're usually looking at, you know, how big is this market? What is this unique differentiating? Yeah. What does the team know? What's your unfair advantage? Things like that.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is uncertain. I mean, I will say candidly that some of the companies that had really great breakout success for my angel portfolio had the success, ironically, not because I was this incredible picker at times, but a couple few of them broke out because of the pandemic and the grocery space and fitness training and things like this. It was very very ironic. I didn't think those would be the big winners, and time will tell. You know, you have to wait 5-7 plus years for exits. You really just don't really know.
Yes. So if we go into that, right? So I think that's also another good thing, right? Because when people read about VCs or even like angels, maybe they think like, oh man, these guys are like ballers, right? I mean, they're just writing checks, then they're smoking cigars.
We love to take risks.
Then they smoke cigars, and then maybe they drive away in their Ferrari, right? But like you
not
said,
quite the case.
But like you said, the moment you invest, you know, then the question is like, okay, is there going to be a follow-on round? Yes or no? Meaning the company should be growing. Are they doing well? Yes or no? Is it going to be a down round? Yes or no? Is there growth? Is the team evolving? So there's so many different,
so many factors,
you know, and then what you said as well, there's like 5-6 years, maybe, that you put your money away or you invested in that company and it's stuck there.
There's a famous quote in a film that I highly recommend to anyone who watch. It's called Something Ventured. And there's a quote from a famous VC in that film. I can't remember the name of I'll try to get it. The quote is, there are no rules in venture except that there are no rules. I learned that one every single day. Yeah. There are so many cases where you meet a founder that just knocks your socks off. That's an American slang. They make such a strong impression that it's almost impossible not to see how strong their plan is and their vision, their execution plan. I mean, I try to fight that, you know, the thing about it is the founders are incredibly great communicators. Usually they're very extroverted and they can tell stories in an amazing way. And they look at, because they get so many no's and they get so much criticism and they get so much negative feedback that they are constantly revising the little tiny things that make them that much better.
Wow.
And sometimes there are some who are a couple few times like yourself, you know, you've been in the venture experience. When you get that light bulb moment and you have this amazing invention or this amazing project or this amazing startup you want to work on, you just become unstoppable. And when I meet people like you or those people, it's really hard to deny it, even if, let's say, the market doesn't seem quite big enough yet or something
this
like that.
This is so interesting, man. Like, even from that statement, there's a few golden nuggets, right? I mean, just building grit is, of course, one thing, because there's going to be so many no's in life in general.
Oh my gosh.
In life in general, how do you deal with that? But I think I always believe, and this is what I share a lot with like entrepreneurs or like startups, is like everyone needs to be a storyteller. Because I think once you're a storyteller, you know how to pitch internally, you know how to pitch to your investors, you know how to pitch with new investors. I think that's such a good point that
storytelling.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
simple. It's so true.
It sounds simple. But then again, you meet entrepreneurs, they come with good stories, you have a good vibe, right? The energy is good. You're like, oh man, this guy or this girl is just gonna slam.
It helps to vibe well.
they're gonna go for a home run. But there is a lot of emotion, right? There's a lot of like gut feeling in there. So how
and psychology.
Do you, for sure, and psychology. How do you balance then the psychology part? So really the soft element of early stage investing versus show me the P&L, show me the financial model. How are you going to justify this 1000x return that I am expecting from this 200k investment? You know?
Yeah, great question. I can already sense that. Yeah, this is such a fascinating conversation. Okay, so here's what I currently do for our fund. Mm. I don't have the bandwidth while I'm raising to have a pitch meeting with every founder. I have maybe 5-10 minutes to review the deck, but I can't get so much just from the deck. And I don't have the time to have an hour long call with each founder to really uncover everything.
Yeah.
So what I do currently is I say, look, get us on your monthly newsletter update. And then also I say, you know, so we can gauge traction. Yeah. And that's usually good because you can see the founders are focused, they're writing what their KPIs, benchmark, their goals, their wins, their asks, et cetera, et cetera. And you can kind of just start to see what's really happening. We usually have 6 months or so, or you know, 3-6 months or so before we really have to invest. So I just let them know that. And then also I'm very active on Twitter, for example. I run these weekly roundtables, which are focused on VC impact with every week we have a group of panelists together in a certain area. And we talk about things like we did a couple of weeks ago, we did climate finance, we did climate adaptation. This week we're doing social prop tech. We're going to do the weekend. We have a different show every week. And with that, a lot of these founders will pop in. I'll get to know them a little bit. I'll see how passionate they may be in terms of their impact and impact focus. And they engage with the community. It kind of builds a little bit of momentum for them. So it pays it forward a little bit. We have a private LP GP community. I like to have other fund managers come in and meet deals where we may be co-investors. And I love to build ecosystem and that kind of thing. And it just helps kind of create the atmosphere where we get to see what's real versus what's not real in my view. That's just one person's view.
Yeah. I love that, man. I love that. And you said about GPs, right? So who were the first like LPs and GPs in the fund like now, like, and how did that conversation evolve? Yeah.
How did that evolve? These are also great, really great questions. I mean, I've had, you know, cause I was a private scout for a couple of years with a lot of different funds.
Yeah.
There are some GPs who invested into our fund. There are some family offices. We were fortunate to get a couple of family offices closed before our first close. That's pretty unheard of. I was really excited for that. It was a big win for us.
Yeah, of course.
And then also we have angels that I've gotten to know through different events. You know, I'm very active in just meeting new people all the time, trying to engage and to get to know them, and then just consistently following up. I have a goal every day of introducing our fundraise to 5 people a day, which is really hard to do. Just to say, hey, I'm this person. We're doing this. Would love to see if we could collaborate. And it's been great that way. It pushes me to the limit a bit.
I love that because I think oftentimes we get a bit intimidated by this type of, oh man, I need to pitch to the whole world. But if you just challenge yourself, and you say 5 people a day, I want to introduce myself, my fund, to just these 5 people. Just make it very smart, make it very easy to follow through. I think it sounds so simple, but I think that is what entrepreneurship is about, right? I think these small goals that can just really push you forward. So going back, so the first LPs of the fund were a business network, right? It's just per business relationships, people that you've worked with, you know, GPs.
Somewhat. I mean, I would say maybe I was part of the Founders Institute, Founders Institute VC Lab program.
Okay.
And it was a hellish boot camp.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of the things, if you may have heard about the program, they just push you through all sorts of KPIs and just trying to get to certain closes and benchmarks, soft commits, and then getting everything formed legally, building the team, the thesis, the, you know, it's, it's chaos. And about 90% of people got kicked out in that process. Wow. I just really just tried to press the limit in terms of how to engage with people. And that put me into a mode where I feel really comfortable just going in cold and just,
that's it, man.
You know, I haven't done cold outreach, by the way, just because there are a lot of nuances to that I haven't fully understood yet. And I think you could get your email banned or all sorts of stuff. And I kind of don't want to do that.
Blacklisted. No, but I love that, man.
Blacklisted email, right?
I love that. I love that.
But I know it could work, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
I can hear you. Okay, good. Yeah. Yeah, it's just one way you could go, but I haven't done that. Mostly it's just on social and really wild. I mean, I don't know about you, but when you start putting yourself out there more and more, you probably realize this, that people receive it and they see that you're consistent and they see that you're that person who wants to show up and you're doing it for the right reasons. You're making people feel comfortable.
Yeah.
I have a podcast as well. I took a little bit of a break from the last month or so, just to go in the second close.
Yeah.
But it's been amazing to interview people. And then you share that content and people engage through it. They connect together.
Yeah.
There's so many aspects of community building that go into content.
Man.
And then you just start to grow your following. I mean, right now at about 8,000 followers on Twitter, and that's growing 10% month over month. So it should triple in the next year at this rate. It's wild. And every single extra person that's there adds to community. And you have to find ways to gracefully do that without attracting people that want to troll and things like that, which is difficult. We could talk about that all day long.
No, but I love that, man. I think, you know, sometimes with these things, right, it's just small steps, right? I mean, like the Chinese proverb says, right, it's like a journey of 1,000 miles, you know, starts with one step, right? And I think those type of things,
you know, this is an entrepreneur, I have to say, I'm just learning backwardly. I really am. And I want to say that I said this a few times, and I don't mean to say it like a humble brag or something, but the entrepreneurs have truly given me a license to do this work. And I owe a deep gratitude for the entrepreneurs that I've met along the way who have put so much trust in me.
Yeah.
I mean, when people lay out their life plan, their goals, their weaknesses, everything, it's a lot of responsibility. And if nothing else, like if I can make a positive impact and just make people feel as though they're safe to talk about their dream with me. I mean, for me, that's super meaningful.
Yeah. And then it comes back again to kind of like this interpersonal skills, communication skills, to creating this quote unquote safe space, right? Where entrepreneurs can really be themselves and really, you know, feel confident enough to share these big dreams with investors. So I think that's both.
I hope to be that person.
Yeah, exactly.
In my ego, I don't want it to get in the way as if I can avoid it.
Yeah, I love that, man. I love that, man. Zeka, two final questions. Two final questions. Question number one
is fun.
Yeah, oh, for sure, man. For sure. Question number one is, what do you think, what is in your opinion, the difference between a good investor and an extraordinary investor?
Patience.
Okay. I like that. Elaborate.
Well, it takes a long time, and there are aspects of patience that at times get very frustrating for me personally. Mm. And there's a lot of success, I believe, that goes into just being consistent and the good old fashioned, you know, putting in the work, taking the time to ask really difficult questions. And sometimes those questions aren't immediate. And I think that's also where patience goes into. And obviously, you have to wait a long time. I mean, if you're trading stocks, as I think you said, you were in the former derivatives world.
Yeah.
Everything's immediate. Everything is right now. The emotions are right. You know, and you know, as you probably know as a trader as well, I've done a little bit of that. You have to be systems too in the way you approach things systematically, and that helps a lot, I believe, also as a VC investor as well.
I love that. I love it. I think that maybe it sounds so easy, but I think in reality, maybe that is. It has some different layers. Yeah, it has some different layers.
Thank you. We need to meditate right now.
Yeah, for sure. Take your time, man. Take that Zen moment, because I think this is pretty deep, man. This is pretty deep.
You're a great interviewer. It's really a pleasure. I like being on your show.
Oh, that's awesome, man.
I hope to. I'm like, wink, wink, invite me back. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I appreciate that. Okay, Zeka, final question, right? I want you
Okay, here we go.
I want you to imagine a day far, far away into the future, right? And on this day, I'm trying to look up Zeka online, but your digital footprint is gone. There's nothing I can find on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all your followers, like everything's gone. The only thing I can find about you are three life lessons that represent your life, that represent lessons that you want to leave the world with. What would those three bullet points be?
Wow. I would say live on an island for a year would be one. I would say get out into nature for two. And then I would say that kindness pays amazing dividends.
I love that, man. I love that. Kindness pays amazing dividends. That is something that is so, so true in today's world, man. I mean, that's a good reminder for all of us that in whatever sphere you're active in, kindness pays amazing dividends. I love that, man. If people want to learn more about Zeka Len and want to learn more about the fund, where should they go?
Twitter. I mean, Zeka_Len. And I hope we get a lot of fun engagements there. It's always great to just meet with friends and chat about things, share news about the venture capital world and startups and podcasting. And I'm really looking forward to listening to and promoting your show too. It's really
awesome,
exciting.
Man. Awesome, man. And website on the fund itself or
any other place? Responsibly.vc. We have open applications for founders. And unfortunately, I should probably say we're focused mostly on US. We are focused on US headquartered companies. We have companies that are moving toward the US and they're in transition. We welcome those companies to apply for Fund One. Mostly just right now I'm in fundraising mode. So we love meeting, I just love meeting new LPs and just great people in general. And this has been so awesome. I really appreciate it.
Awesome, dude. Okay. Well, I'll put everything in the show notes so people know where to find Zeka Len and Responsibly. I want to thank you so, so much for these few minutes together, man. I really appreciate it. I think this is one of the, again, this is the first time, man.
Dankjewel. Dankjewel.
Vielen Dank. And I hope to see you in real life, man.
Thank you so much for listening to the Masters of Cashflow podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, then please make sure to subscribe over on Apple or Spotify. And I'd really appreciate it if you can leave a rating and review and let me know what your biggest takeaway is of this episode. Thanks again, and I hope to see you in the next one.